Welcome to the Society of Advanced Bronchoscopy. This is The Way Podcast. My name is Dominique Pepper, and in this podcast, we interview leaders and experts in advanced bronchoscopy and interventional pulmonology. And for today, we discuss lung nodule detection and building a lung nodule program.
Yeah, my name is Nick Weisham. I'm a pulmonologist at the Vancouver Clinic and the medical director of our lung cancer screening program.
And it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast with us. And Renee?
Yeah, I'm Renee Klein. I'm a nurse navigator. I work with Dr. Weisham, and I take a great interest in the lung cancer screening and incidental lung nodule realm.
Yeah, it's really exciting to have the two of you on this podcast with us. We haven't had a physician and a nurse navigator together, so really excited, especially since this is November Lung Cancer Awareness Month. So maybe I can kick off by asking each of you, how did you each get into this space? We're obviously talking about lung cancer awareness and screening. Maybe share with our audience what got you here. Nick?
I got the idea to start a lung cancer screening program at our clinic when I showed up and tried to order one. And believe it or not, our radiologist refused to do so because we didn't have a program. And we're a large multi-specialty group with a lot of primary care patients. I'd seen numerous patients that come through with cancers stage two and higher who were eligible for screening. And it seemed like an easy fix. It's not been easy. I don't want to minimize it, but in my early career naivete, I thought this is so obvious. And so we got some institutional support to start this, which has been great. And that's how I met Renee.
Well, my interest in lung cancer screening started from a more personal level. My mom had been diagnosed with lung cancer, and unfortunately, it took a very long time for her to end up getting her diagnosis. I decided as a nurse, I wanted to be a part of the patient's journey and help them with any barriers with care and improve the treatment planning. And I jumped in with both feet when Dr. Weisham and his team said they needed a nurse navigator. I was there.
Yeah, that's a really powerful story, Renee, and one of the reasons a lot of us get involved in lung cancer care, with the hope that we could improve the lives of others that are coming along.
Nick, one of the big challenges that we face is that there's a lot of patients out there with lung cancer that is being missed. How do we better improve the detection and referral of patients with lung nodules so that they can eventually be diagnosed with lung cancer?
That's a great question. And I think we in this space have learned a lot in recent years. I'm not sure what your training was like, but in mine, there was a lot of surveillance of suspicious findings. And that was for multiple reasons, including limitations of technology. But also at that time, there wasn't appreciation of the survival benefit of diagnosing lung cancers earlier and earlier. It wasn't until, I believe, 2017 when the most recent lung cancer staging guidelines were published, where we really started to realize that there is a survival benefit for diagnosing lung cancer even as small as 1 centimeter. And evidence since then has shown that, particularly for adenocarcinomas, when diagnosed promptly above a centimeter, meaning in less than 30 days, there's a survival benefit for that. And so that evidence, as well as the patient experience, has dramatically changed my approach to this space, and it's made me much, much more proactive. Coupled with advancements in technology, both in the diagnostic side and the surgical side, I've been able to see a significant change in what we've been able to do in early intervention of lung cancer.
Renee, I want to pull you in here. Obviously, detecting these lung nodules is very important. How do you speak to your staff and to your patients to encourage them to either go for screening or for getting evaluated by the pulmonologist to see if their lung nodule is lung cancer?
So the eligibility requirements for lung cancer screening makes it a little bit easier to kind of break open with the conversation. But I make sure that education is key. So the patient, the staff, they need to understand what a nodule is, and risk assessment is very important and part of that discussion. With the incidental lung nodules, it's important to explain to the patient, same thing, what a lung nodule is, but the risk factors, you know, are not noted there. So they're, it's a little more higher anxiety type of a discussion. But again, education and letting them know that early detection is key, and the treatment plan needs to go as smoothly as possible, and that our team and I'm there behind them to make sure behind the scenes that's all happening.
And then what words do you use? I mean, a lot of patients come in and this word, as you said, lung nodule, lung mass, it's like, what is it? You know, so how do you break it down for your patients, Renee, when you've seen them and talking about lung nodules before they get evaluated by Dr. Wysham?
So I usually start out with the radiologist has found that you have a 5 millimeter lung nodule, let's say, on the CT. That's about the size of a number two pencil eraser, fairly small. But what we want to do, because it's a 5 millimeter size, our cutoff's around five there for increased interval, we want to make sure that you don't fall through the cracks. So we're going to go ahead and get you in with Dr. Wysham. He's going to compare the scans from previously and let you know what that interval is. And it could be 1, 3, 6 months, depending on what he sees. The main thing with patients is I like to stress the importance of having a team. So with the reporting of the lung nodule to them, they're also getting, their primary care is getting an update. So they'll have the radiologist, the primary care, and the pulmonologist in their corner. And I usually say that lung nodules are an inflammatory response. And then they'll say, well, is it cancer? And we say, well, you know, I'm not going to say that it is cancer. It is not. What we're going to do, though, is evaluate this and get you on a navigation pathway so you do not fall through the cracks. And if it's a female patient, I usually compare it to an abnormal mammogram. Not every lump and bump is cancer, but sometimes we want to watch those larger sizes a little more closely.
Great. And then, Nick, you'll get these patients referred to you. How do you go about explaining to them, you know, why do we need to monitor these lung nodules? How do we go about detecting them? And how do you separate for the patients the differences between incidental lung nodules versus lung nodules detected by screening?
Yeah, I am a strong proponent of using a risk calculator in the room with the patient. I have several of them on my phone, and I find that that is helpful. You know, not every patient really responds to numbers, but often when you're sitting with a patient and they might have a lung nodule of 8 millimeters, in their mind, they think that lung cancer is more likely than not. And often they're surprised when they hear me say that the chance of lung cancer is 11% based on their, you know, age and other such factors. And so that situates things pretty well for certain patients. And then the other thing that I like to communicate is how when a lung nodule is found at this size and we are planning to watch it, that no matter what happens on the follow-up scan, I can assure them that they're going to be well cared for, that if this does grow and it turns out to be a cancer, that their chance of cure is in the neighborhood of 90%. And there's a good chance, in some cases, 80 to 90% chance, that that nodule will be stable or will resolve. So it's a great opportunity to educate to really give them the background. And I think that helps our adherence numbers. And, you know, so for in our clinic, we see all lung RADS 3 findings by either a physician or a PA that can do the more detailed risk assessment, pull the prior imaging from all prior hospitalizations and such. So that's in our screening program. You asked about incidentals. Incidentals is a much more complicated patient population. Usually they're getting a scan for some reason, and that makes the nodule more often than not it's something that isn't cancer. You know, often the nodule's shown up because they have, you know, respiratory difficulty, and that's why they go to the ER and then the nodule's noted. So the rate of inflammatory nodules in that population, if you will, is a lot higher. But the fact remains that about half of lung cancers are diagnosed in people who are even eligible for screening. And that doesn't even mention the fact that many patients who are eligible for screening are not getting it. But we are doing a tremendous amount of chest imaging for various reasons. And to not harness that data for the benefit of our population really seems, it's clearly a missed opportunity. And we see that clinically every day.
So let's unpack that risk stratification component. There seem to be at least six different calculations that you can perform using either the Mayo one or different ones. Which ones have been shown to have the best results? And what are the what is the role of these newer based blood assays where there's a, like the Nodify to determine whether or not the patient could be staged or the increased risk for detecting lung cancer?
Yeah, the Mayo is probably the simplest model and probably most popular, but it's also pretty well recognized that it overestimates the likelihood of cancer. And that's probably in part because it was derived at a referral center like Mayo. I tend to use the Brock model in part because it has a pretty nice app through the British Thoracic Society that also includes the Herder model. And you know, for PET scans. And so the choice of model might kind of vary. I often run several to describe to a patient the range, and because I kind of like to geek out on this stuff. The risk stratifying blood test, Nodify, is based on the Mayo model. And so in those patients, if I'm contemplating ordering that risk stratification blood test, I will clearly be calculating a Mayo risk with them. And there's other novel risk stratification tests on the horizon, which may be a little bit more independent of a specific published model, but do incorporate clinical variables as well as other biomarkers, RNA transcription, et cetera. And I think those show great promise, though they aren't commercially available just yet, at least in a point of care setting. But I'm speaking of specifically the Veracyte product that previously was validated on bronchoscopic samples is being tested in nasal swabs, and we're part of that trial as well. So I think there's a tremendous amount of opportunity, and I should have mentioned radiomics as well. We'd love to get better estimates of whether these nodules are cancer or not, so that when we then perform invasive procedures, which carry risk and of course expense, we have a better idea that this is the right intervention for the patient at this time.
Great. So I actually want to step back, and I actually forgot to ask Renee this question, because she actually had a really great post on LinkedIn on how to find lung nodule patients. Maybe you could share that with our audience, because the obvious one that people think of are, you know, lung cancer screening and incidentals, but you actually gave a pretty impressive list of how folks can go about identifying patients with lung nodules that we need to then risk stratify.
Renee? Yes. Yes. So you could utilize your CPT codes or your billing through your billing departments. You can start a registry to collect patients maybe that have nodules of any size. You could even narrow that list to 6 or 8 millimeters to be kind of a more specific priority. But I feel like the referral source is a great way to start as far as grabbing the primary care's attention and letting them know that you're able to have time aside, put aside for these patients to be seen. I truthfully talk to clinics often about where to start in terms of reporting, especially utilizing your radiology reports to kind of show an awareness for maybe opportunities or missed opportunities within your own system. And leadership usually is pretty interested in what the numbers are, especially if they're trying to decide whether or not to pull forward with the program at all. Dr. Weisham, maybe we could bring up some of our examples of how we pulled data for our patients.
Yeah, we have a screening program that once we got things pretty well ironed out, and apologies to you, Dr. Pepper. Renee is now interviewing me. You should get out of the job.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, it.
Yeah, so, but it is a good point. So, you know, we use the infrastructure in our screening program to start to branch out to incidentals. And, you know, to be honest, it's been a mixed success. We had a structured reporting template by a radiologist that suggested a follow-up interval. We've been able to catch quite a few patients that would have otherwise been missed. But one of the things that we learned actually is that, at least in institutions of our size, a homegrown solution is probably not as efficient as basically outsourcing this work to companies that do it very well. And what I mean by that is it required quite a big lift of local coding expertise. And in the years since we launched it, it's moved on and we're now starting to see some misses. So we are very eagerly awaiting a better solution to this problem. And it also is important to partner with, depending on your practice setting, you know, we're an outpatient organization, partner with local hospitals and create those synergies, if you will, or collaborations that allow you access to these data. And just highlighting how a nodule is really it's an important problem, even when it's small. Particularly in patients with risk factors. I think I've seen a pretty significant shift in the seriousness that all kinds of providers apply to this problem.
So maybe you could unpack that, and either of you could answer this. We went and started looking at these different software packages, and you could pay up to $100,000 a year to detect lung nodules and put them from, you know, lung nodule detection all the way down to seeing them in tumor board, and they're fantastic programs and software programs, but someone's got to pay the bill. What low-cost, high-impact strategies would you all advise for folks who are just getting their lung nodule program started that they can use to, down the line, they could maybe get into, you know, the more expensive, the high-impact ones? Where can they start? And later on, which software programs would you advise they consider or at least look at?
Go ahead, Renee.
Well, we started off with demos of various software vendors. And as we did the demos, we learned more and more about how we could grab the data. And so, to keep it sort of in-house and low cost, we were able to utilize or maximize the Epic module that we currently have, utilizing the Epic team, the analysts, the PAC servers and their team, and just basically running some numbers. But as the numbers grow in these programs, you know, you can start out with Excel sheets and use your basics in whatever resources you can grab in, you know, connect with. But when you're doing Excel only to track these patients and these numbers are growing and getting much larger, it's always a good idea to be planning ahead for those discussions for a software vendor to help kind of facilitate the priorities, making sure that the letters get sent and all the things that we need to do to make the program successful. We found that, there are parts of EPIC that were expensive, for example, and totally out of our budget. So we had to, as we went through demos, we had to kind of, give our, these are the three, priority areas and some of the things, the bells and whistles, such as, preparing for a thoracic conference, we had to let go or decided that that wasn't as much of a priority. But I feel like if a team starts out with just getting educated about what is out there, it really helps kind of give you some more insight on, how you can utilize the programs and also what the growth looks like for that specific software vendor for you and them.
Yeah, I'll just add,
go ahead, Nick.
I'm sorry to interrupt. The price you quoted is a lot of money, no doubt. But the workforce, the woman power, as it often is, to administer a screening program or incidental program is also quite costly and valuable. And so in our experience, Renee started with us as a 0.5. We had systems in place to help her management. As that grew, it became clear that a lot of her time was spent in data entry and antiquated systems. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot out there, whether it be natural language processing, et cetera, that can really reduce that work. The screening program as we have it, it's very high quality, but requires a lot of manual work, whether it be from our various administrators of the program, our schedulers asking patients about if they had an interval CT scan at anywhere else in our community. There's a lot of care coordination that frankly can be automated through these. So it's easy to look at that $100,000 or whatever your quote is and say, well, gosh, that doesn't seem worth it. The alternative is to pay somebody salary in your organization. It may not hit the same cost center, but it'll still cost as much money. And if you have a system that you can rely on, the downstream revenues that flow from this and the lives saved, et cetera, pay for it quite quickly. There's really nice, freely available pro forma models put forward by nonprofit institutions like the GoTo Foundation and the National Lung Cancer Roundtable that demonstrate very clearly to your administrators the value of these investments.
So maybe give us some more details there, Nick. So for example, I'm doing my Excel spreadsheet because starting off pretty low-key. What kind of data did you use as like, oh, this is going to be pivotal data that I need to communicate to my C-suite administration? What data were you collecting? What were the pain points that you let them know about? How did you propose the solution to make it viable to them?
Yeah, that's a great question. So this all started when we had a really bad miss, basically. And, in the back of my mind, I wanted to start a lung cancer screening program, and I wanted a reason to have a meeting with the C-suite. And so we had an issue where a miss resulted in advanced stage lung cancer. It didn't hurt that that patient was also very well connected. And, he was very understanding about it, honestly, but wanted to know why it happened. And so that brought the attention to our administrators. And, I would hate for that to happen to anybody, but unfortunately it happens all the time. And so in the mindset to never waste a crisis, I got in front of them and said, well, these sorts of things would be less likely to happen if we had a coordinated program on this problem. And I'd like to start with screening for these reasons and then eventually manage incidental lung nodules. The data that we used to form a business proposal, which was hard back then, is a lot easier now for the reasons I just mentioned. We just used the National Lung Cancer Screening Trial outcomes, and our business team assigned values to every service that was within our organization. And for us, that was mostly radiology and pulmonology. And As I'm sure you're aware, pulmonology is not exactly a profit center for any healthcare system. But so most of our program is supported on radiology imaging and a little bit on oncology downstreams. In our organization, we don't have a thoracic surgeon, but that would be a major driver of profit of these. And so do check out the GoTo Foundation resources and the National Lung Cancer Roundtable. They call it the Lung Plan. And there's a lot of numbers on it, but if you show your clinic administrator this and give them some estimates about volumes, it will produce a number that will unlock doors. And so speaking about nodule management software, we did just that with a manager who was initially quite skeptical. He had not yet ingested the Kool-Aid that Renee and I were very influenced by. But when he saw those numbers, it was a very easy sell, and we will be getting that resource because the payoff is pretty obvious once you are able to run that exercise.
And then in terms of the software programming, and you talk about the lung nodule management software, what do you think our listeners should bear in mind? Like, what questions should they be asking? What have you noticed appear great when people are talking about or trying to sell you the product that don't actually pan out? What made you choose what you eventually went for? What were the characteristics?
I think the main things to look for is engage your nurse in really understanding how is this program's usability. And, you know, I can't pick a winner in this forum. That many are doing great work, and there's probably ones that will incorporate radiomics and other features that will surpass those that are even currently available. But your most valuable resource is not the subscription fees to these software suites, it's your time. And so really lean on your support staff, whether it be a nurse or any others, to understand what enhances their workflow. So does it minimize manual data entry? Does it automatically generate letters? Does it automatically generate reminders or scheduling tickets? Does it automatically, in some way, find interval scans that supplant the need for another screening scan? Many of the systems out there can do a lot of those things. And so that was the lens that I approached it from, was do you have any proof that this is going to decrease the amount of essentially manual data management that is required to manage this population?
So Renee, you obviously, from what Nick's telling us, getting the nurse navigator on board and having them lead this program and have a big influence on the software, the choosing of the software, that's really important. What did you see, and we don't need to mention any products, but what features did you think were really valuable? And as a follow-up question, how did it help you to create a successful and effective lung nodule program?
Well, the key to navigation is to prevent from losing any patient to follow up, right? So my goal was I didn't care what it did for PACS and radiology. Honestly, I wanted to know what it could do for our team. Could anyone sit in front of the screen and decide who was a priority or not, or who was overdue the latest? So it had to be navigation friendly, the prioritizing, the letters, all those things to keep us in compliance, and also giving us enough time in the day to be able to call and connect with the patient. So if I had my processes streamlined and my workflows were efficient, I could still have some time to connect with those patients that could be possibly falling through the cracks or, out there and as a loose cannon is how I usually word it. So navigation needs to support and needs to be familiar. It needs to be user-friendly for the team. The health check, I was going to just put in there, health check is offered with some of the demos, and that will give the numbers and things like that. but also with that demo, allow that nurse navigator to have some time with the vendor and ask questions, his or herself, that applies to the current workflow. The legal implications of these programs are huge. There's, I was looking at a quality and getting some information off the internet, and guess what popped up? An attorney's office who says, you know, that they're a resource for being missed to follow up and such. So I feel like the priority really needs to be in navigation and keeping those patients within the system and not outlying.
Yeah, there's one more feature that I guess I would look for is you will at some point in the future come to your administrator and ask for some more resources for something. And there are some programs that actually have live return on investment dashboards. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just for background, the business side of medicine is not my interest. But what I've learned through this process is that it really unlocks resources for the patients and problems that you care the most about. And so understanding how that's important, no matter where you practice, and leveraging those tools that are made available to you can really enhance your effectiveness.
And then how did you go about assembling your team? Speaking to a number of these programs that are starting up, they know they need a nurse navigator. They usually have a patient care coordinator at the clinic that's triaging these patients or getting them into the pulmonary clinic. How did you decide which team members you needed, and how would you recommend other programs go about getting everyone together? I'll start with Renee.
Okay. Well, physician champion is key, someone that will talk to and speak to leadership and the other providers within the practice or in the community. And then also a nurse navigator or someone who can connect with the patient. And so some clinics or hospital systems with screening programs, they'll use an MA, for example, or an LPN, and that's okay, just as long as you have someone that can connect with the patient and have those discussions, which I call like the NN nudge, you know, moving the needle and getting those patients in and creating relationships. Also, the multidisciplinary approach, so having the thoracic conferences and the connections there. So we are able to get those patients into a treatment plan, and we know who we're sending them to, and we are all coming together for the patient. But the buy-in from the team is huge, and that's very, very important. So you need that team that is moving forward in the same direction.
Yeah, I would start with a nurse in general. And it doesn't have to be his or her entire professional effort as you're growing. But pretty quickly, we realized that a lot of the tasks are largely administrative. And so we brought in people, even without much medical background, who've done a tremendous amount of work and really have learned a ton and grown into their role, as well as medical assistants that are kind of dedicated to the program. So there's a lot of people that can coordinate care. They just need to understand that, you know, business as usual, where, you know, loss to follow-up is a common explanation, that's not going to cut it in this space. We're not satisfied with that explanation. We're always looking for holes in our system and ways to improve care.
And I do mention other job descriptions such as MA or LPN, and the fact that it is hard to find and difficult to find nurse navigators in the lung cancer realm. We're growing, we're getting bigger. We've got a national group now. But in the beginning, when you're starting out, I do think that having that physician champion and the nurse is really, really helpful to kind of get things off and from a clinical standpoint. And then especially creating those workflows.
Great. And then maybe you could share with us, how has your program changed over the last couple of years? So maybe walk back a couple of years and tell us, you know, what volume you were seeing, what you're doing as compared to now, and what your expectations are in the next couple of years. Nick?
We started back in 2019, just in a limited pilot in our pulmonary department, mostly just to test our systems. And then we wanted to launch in primary care, but there was a little bit of a pandemic, which slowed us a bit. But since then, we have a large primary care base, and most of our success was making it easy to refer in. Most of our referrals occurred by their PCP, and that was enabled by an order set and templates in Epic. As we've grown, we tend to average anywhere between 60 to 80 new referrals per month, and that translates into about 160 or more scans per month. And then we were able to add a PA, and she does shared decision making for patients who didn't get that from their primary care, or their primary care didn't find time to document that. She also sees the lung RADS 3s. And then we've been making it available to outside practices. Getting outside practices engaged in this is a little bit more challenging. We don't have the same tools, but we've tried to break down those barriers as much as we can. So, I think we're up to about 2/3 of our eligible population within Vancouver Clinic, which is really great. Colonoscopy screening is at 80%, so we'd like to do that or more. So there's still a lot of work to be done, but we've got a pretty good system, and we'd really like to engage more of our local stakeholders in that in some way. Those are the ways that we've grown. And again, we're getting organized around incidental nodules. We've made some attempts in that space. We would like to have a more robust program in that. And so that's our next area for growth, as well as I'd mentioned in surveillance. So, there's a remarkable recurrence rate for people who are previously diagnosed with lung cancer, up to 25%. And surveillance guidelines now extend to lifelong. Presumably at some point you stop screening with annual low-dose CT scans. So we're engaged in conversations with our oncology colleagues, thoracic surgery colleagues. It's customary to see them in your clinic at some interval for up to 5 years, but then what? And we would like to use, again, the same infrastructure to offer surveillance services to folks that were previously diagnosed and cured with lung cancer, because the likelihood of a early stage recurrence or new primary lung cancer is higher than the general population.
And then Renee, maybe you could comment on what do you think, we make a lot of mistakes as we're learning things, and the important thing is not to hit your head again and again and again. What have you encountered over the last couple of years that you're like, oh man, maybe I should have done that differently, or words of advice to those who are willing to hear, don't do this, or maybe do this rather? Renee?
I think I would say anticipate the growth. I had no idea that we were going to grow to numbers as we have done, and it's an amazing thing to see. But having more of a long-term plan as far as kind of preparing ourselves, like what are we going to do with workflows and such, I noticed the last year it's been a lot of work with improving our workflows, making sure that we're delegating and demonstrating effectiveness in our tasks and who's doing what. So that would be the only thing. I feel that these programs are beneficial when you reach out and talk to others. I've learned so much talking to different clinics, being a part of the Intuitive Surgical Group and having those meetings and webinars and finding out what other people do. I think that our recipe has been successful, but I always like to hear what other people have done to maybe shortcut some of the barriers that we've encountered.
Yeah, I think ongoing learning and being willing to collaborate is really important. As we draw to the end of the podcast recording, I do want to give each of you the opportunity to share with our audience anything that we haven't covered that you definitely want them to be aware of, as well as any parting remarks or any pearls. I'll start with Renee and then Nick.
Well, I work very hard trying to communicate the need, but it is doable. These lung cancer screening programs, incidental lung nodule programs, do require a lot of work, but it's so beneficial and rewarding. This is the most purposeful position I've had, and I've been a nurse for 25 years. So I highly recommend, and I just can't even tell you how wonderful it is to be a part of these patients' lives and getting them the care that they need. That whole treatment plan of 35 to 40 days instead of, you know, 90 is such a reward to me, to have patients able to get through their treatment and have it be successful and be, you know, a save and a cure.
Yeah, I guess my parting message would be one that I learned from you, Dr. Pepper, and that's you have to know your mission and your vision and your value in the healthcare ecosystem. There's a lot of pulmonologists, especially after the experiences of the last few years, that feel overworked, don't feel like they have a lot of bandwidth for taking on new projects. Many of them know they should be doing screening, don't feel like they would be supported to do so, and it just feels like a lift that they have to do all on their own. And my message to people who might be resistant to spearheading such an effort is that you don't have to do it alone. You need to advocate for yourself and get some resources, get a nurse or somebody to help you along, manage the data, and you continue to do your medicine. And what you'll see is, particularly on that second or third year follow-up scan, it's just amazing. I mean, you'll see nodules that grow from 4 to 6 to 8 millimeters, and you know it's cancer. And then and you'll have that conversation with your surgeon and say, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I want you to cut out an 8 millimeter cancer. And, you know, just the whole conversation around lung cancer completely changes when you're able to intervene early. And it's through these proactive early detection efforts, whether you start in incidentals and then do screening or vice versa, like we have, it's amazingly rewarding. It's, as Renee said, one of the most professionally rewarding features of my career to date. And so it's well worth it.
Yeah, I think what struck me in this interview is the partnership that the two of you share as a physician and nurse navigator, and it's how comfortable you are with each other. And I think that's testament to the fact that you've both, invested yourselves, and it's clear that the patients are benefiting. So an absolute pleasure to have the two of you here. For our audience, you can definitely find both Dr. Weisham and Renee Klein on the LinkedIn app if you want to get hold of them and get their expertise. An absolute pleasure interviewing the both of you, and all the best. We'll be looking out to see your future success. Take care.
Thank you.
A big thank you to Ms. Renee Klein and Dr. Nick Weisham, and a big thank you to all of you for listening to This Is The Way podcast. I'm Dominic Pepper for the Society of Advanced Bronchoscopy.